The thrill and excitement of March Mania is here, and DraftKings Sportsbook, one of America's top-rated sportsbook apps, is giving new customers a shot to turn $5 into $150 instantly in bonus bets with any college basketball bet. You can find all the lines and available odds, of course, at the DraftKings Sportsbook app. North Carolina listeners, don't forget, DraftKings Sportsbook is now live in your state. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SBNFL. New customers can bet $5 to get $150 instantly in bonus bets only at DraftKings Sportsbook with code SBNFL. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly on behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort. 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction, void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/bball for eligibility, deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
All right, welcome to the Cincy Jungle Super Show. It's Ace Boogie, but of course I'm joined with all the forces of this great network. We got my man Matt Minnick, we got John Sheeran, we got Zim, the Dream Team, Houdet, and then we've got, of course, Anthony Cosenza. How you guys doing tonight?
Doing awesome.
Doing good. Rooming here.
Definitely, definitely. So we wanted to bring everyone together and kind of do somewhat of a halftime, not a halftime adjustment like Marvin Lewis never used to do, but sort of like a halftime meeting here to kind of just give our thoughts on the season and really just talk about it for the most part. So part one of the show essentially is going to be on, like, is this what we expected, especially with us going and getting Joe Burrow after finishing last year with not the best record, but with the big expectations coming into the season, is this where we expected to be at? Anthony, what were your thoughts coming into the season, and are we where you thought that we would be at, or is it not going how you thought that it would really go?
Well, first of all, thanks for setting this up, guys. I know you guys were the brain children behind this big show, so I appreciate you setting that up and getting all that going. You know, it's hard to say, because I think on one hand, I think we all kind of wanted to temper some expectations based on them only going 2-14 last year. But then you have the exciting offseason with Burrow and all the free agency acquisitions. And you go, can this team be sneaky? Can they get 8 wins? Can they sneak into 9 wins? And I think that was kind of cautiously optimistic. And now you look at it, 2-5-1. But you look at 3 or 4 opportunities that went right through their fingertips there of a couple of games they should have won. So, you know, I thought I'd right about now I'd had them maybe around 500, maybe a game or two under 500. So they're maybe performing a little lower to my expectations. But there's also been a lot of injuries and a lot of other issues going on. So for the most part, kind of where I expected them at this point.
So I'll just piggyback off of that. For me personally, I didn't think that they were going to be at this point just only having two wins at this point. For me, at first, I kind of started out at 7-9-1. And then I think once we saw Joe Burrow became a captain and was a leader, I was like, well, maybe they can go, you know, 8-8 or something like that. I actually thought at the beginning of the season, that was kind of the stretch, in my opinion, of somewhat of the easier games, right? When you talk about the Chargers game, you talk about the Browns game, I really thought that those would be matchups that they could at least string off 2 or 3 wins in. And when that didn't happen, I kind of was like, man, that's when I started to kind of get cynical, because I knew the tough stretch that was waiting for them with the Colts game. You also talk about the Titans game, the Browns again, the Steelers game, like, this was kind of the stretch that I was somewhat worried about. So I think that I was kind of definitely wrong when it came to like this part of the season per se. Matt, where were your thoughts on where the season would be at? And was there anything that you were wrong on at this point or right on, or is this what you expected?
You know, I too expected them to start a little bit stronger. I thought that the first 4 weeks of the season and the first 4 weeks after the bye week were where most of their wins would come from. You know, optimistically, I thought there's a chance at 9 wins. I mean, there's still a chance at 9 wins, but you know, I was in that, you know, 6 to 9 kind of range. You know, I thought at this point there'd probably be 3, maybe 4 if they pulled something off. But I think we knew that these last 4 games were going to be pretty tough coming in. So I'm not too terribly surprised in terms of like what I was right on, you know, looking at kind of prediction for the season where we thought things would be, and how everything went. You know, I was right to not panic, to take Zach Taylor's advice, because I think a lot of people were starting to punt on the season. I heard there was a lot of chatter of top 5 pick, and you know, we're, you know, the position they were going to be in there, and you know, I don't think it's going to happen. You know, because I do, not to get too far ahead of things. There's some positive things going on, and I see them stringing together some wins as the season comes along. Now, that was part of the reason I always was pretty optimistic about the season, was I knew what they had. 10, 11, 12, you know, with the Giants, with the Redskins, with the former Redskins, that is, and with the Dolphins. Like, you know, I knew things were going to get easier. We ended up kind of getting lucky on that, guess what? You know, professional football teams in Texas suck this year too. So, I mean, outside of the division, you know, the Washington football team might be the most, you know, and the Dolphins are probably the most difficult ones, you know, outside of the division. After the bye week, it's not too bad. So, but yeah, I mean, I think just kind of not giving up on the season. It sucks when they don't win the games when they're right there, but you know, that's kind of one of those things, is the progression with it. Like, first you're losing, and then, you know, you're losing big, and then you start losing small, and then you got to start winning those tight games. And then you start really competing. So it's a slow process sometimes, but we have an ownership group that, for better or worse, will give you the time to do it.
Definitely, definitely. John, what were your thoughts so far coming into the season and where they're at right now?
It's really hard to predict which teams are going to be good and who isn't going to be good weeks or months going into the season. Like, I looked at the schedule back in May. I'm like, yeah, like the Eagles are going to be good. The Chargers are going to be pretty good. Like, you know, it's like things happen, things change. And with the Bengals, like, as typical, a lot of injuries have unfortunately impacted the state of the roster and how effective the roster has been through the course of 8 weeks. But I was pretty sure that they were going to win like 6 or 7 games this year, and they're on pace for about 6 or 5. So I think things are trending about where I expected them to be. Obviously, you know, the close losses, that they continue to stink. And, you know, Zach Taylor still has a lot to prove in regards to finishing games that they should finish. But, I mean, I look at, you know, how the first part of the season went. You know, I didn't really expect them to beat the Chargers. I didn't really expect them to beat the Eagles. And they were 0-1-1 in those games. I don't think any of us expected the Browns to be at least this effective in some of these games as they have been. And they finished 0-2 against them. I think we all expected them to beat the Browns at least once during the season. But I think, you know, most of us thought the Jaguars was going to be a win, and the Ravens, they weren't exactly ready to compete with them. So, I mean, they've definitely had some courses of bad luck. But I think for the most part, a lot of these losses, they were deserved losses. They had chances to win them, but they just didn't play like the better team in most of them. I think 2-5-1, while it, you know, it doesn't look very good, it's about where they probably should be based off of how they've performed this season. But things are definitely trending up. And I think, you know, like Matt said, the back end of the schedule, aside from playing the Steelers twice and playing the Ravens again, there's a lot of winnable games in the season, and they can get into like that 5, 6, maybe even 7 win range. So I think that fits a lot where most of our expectations, at least in the reasonable sense, where they were before the season. And obviously with Joe Burrow, you know, I think he's obviously trending upwards, and he's going to finish with a pretty good rookie season, for all things considered. And that, I think, exceeded at least reasonable expectations for what a rookie quarterback who starts in week 1 of his rookie season ends up being. So I think he's even exceeding my expectations for him in regards to that.
Sam, what are your thoughts on the season so far? Is this what you expected? Were you right on? What were you right on, and what were you wrong on?
John, first and foremost, Burrow is rookie of the year. Let's start off like that. You're trying to sell my boy a little short, I thought. I thought you were just talking about like, oh yeah, you know, he's gonna have a pretty good year. No, he's rookie of the year. This thing is happening. So I knew that was gonna happen. I did not know that we would lose the way that we've lost. In a lot of different circumstances, I feel like I came into the season with a little bit of a more optimistic approach, and I think that was probably like at like 6 or 7 wins. I think a lot of people thought it might be a little bit less than that. I never thought we would lose the way that we've lost. If you had told me coming into the season that he'd be throwing consistently for 300 yards, like most of my message and my content is predicated on offense and the lack thereof in the years past. So I would have never thought the defense would have failed us like that in these close games. I'm not even going to count the Chargers game because in my mind, I still think we won that game, like in my mind. Like, I'm just weird like that. But aside from that, though, yeah, I mean, I feel like they're right on course of 6 to 7 games. If they could do something crazy, it would have to happen right after the bye, I guess. Matt, who would have thought that you would have got swept by the Browns? I never would have thought that.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
Zen, this is America, by the way. You can just claim the Chargers as a victory.
All right. I tell my friends that was a dub. Because, you know, they never seen the game. So they're all just sitting there like, oh, I mean, well, you got 2-5-1. I'm like, but we won the Chargers game. Then I got to show them the AJ Green highlight and all that. Like, yeah, it's still a win for me.
So the next thing we're going to talk about is just the biggest impact injury of the year. And I'll kind of start off with this one. Me personally, I think for me, it was DJ Reader, right? Because we went out, we had this offseason where we went out and he was kind of the biggest guy, or the guy at least I was most excited about in terms of what he could bring to this team. And obviously pairing him with Geno, which in my opinion, outside of Billings, who I actually like, he still never lived up to kind of the potential of what we wanted to see next to Geno. So for me, it was DJ Reader because he was the number one guy for me. Like the impact that I wanted to see him make, especially in a division like Baltimore likes to run the ball and stuff like that. It felt to me like a lot of our moves in free agency were set up to kind of defend the Ravens. So for me, it was DJ Reader. But John, were there any impact or big impact injuries of the year for you so far?
I think I'm leaning towards Geno Atkins. You know, it was obviously losing him for the first 4 weeks, you know, handicapped the defense to a certain extent. But even when he's back, like he's only playing 33% of the snaps. And I think part of that is also because they want to keep him fresh. But also, you know, it feels like with what they have and what they don't have at defensive tackle, if he can play, he should probably be playing more. So who knows if he's even 100% even now halfway through the season. But they just don't have a pass rushing presence at that position right now, and we have seen the value of what Geno Atkins has been in the Bengals defense for so many years. Now that we see him now, he just looks like past his prime. And again, he could still be injured, but they're not using him a lot, and it shows because they just don't have a pass rushing presence at that spot. And the Reader injury hurts as it combines with it and as it piles onto that. But I think at least the guys that have replaced Reader have been at least decent. I'm talking about Christian Covington and Xavier Williams, but they have no interior pass rushing presence, and I think Atkins's injury is the biggest reason for that.
Anthony, who do you have as the biggest injury impact this season so far?
Well, Atkins is definitely a one I was going to think about, but hear me out on this one. I'm going to say Trey Waynes. You know, I mean, at least the Bengals got a few snaps out of Reader. I think they got a couple games out of him. He showed he was effective, and obviously that impact is a big one as well. But look, I mean, some of these meltdowns that the Bengals have had late in games have been the passing defense and guys not named William Jackson not making plays in the secondary. Jesse Bates has stepped up. We'll probably talk about him in terms of midseason awards and stuff in a little bit, but he's stepped up. He's played awesome. William Jackson, he's missed a couple of games here and there, but you know, when he's in there, he's been having a great season in there for the most part, especially if you look at some Pro Football Focus metrics, etc. I look at the other side. There's such up and down play from Darius Phillips. He's like interception or give up a big play. You can look at the second Cleveland game and see exactly what I'm talking about when I reference that. And, you know, so I think the Bengals Trey Waynes is not as good of a player or as talented of a player as a Geno Atkins, a DJ Reader, or some of these guys we're talking about. But I think just in terms of some of the late meltdowns that we've seen, having a little bit more of a steady veteran presence on the other side with William Jackson, or even in the game that William Jackson missed, I think that's kind of a big issue. So I think I kind of agree
with you on that, especially with us not being able to see Trey Waynes, especially with Darius Phillips having that injury in the last game. We're even more decimated at that point. Mackenzie Alexander, I've really liked. He seemed to kind of pull it together there, at least in the slot. But Zim, what are your thoughts so far this season in terms of the biggest impact injury of the season?
I feel like I want to take a piece off of everybody's, like what they just said, you know. Injuries happen all across the league, and one thing that I preach, I guess, to everyone is, like, there is I hate the term next man up, because the next man isn't going to be Geno Atkins, or it's not going to be whatever. I don't like that term, but at the same time, I find it very, very hard to, like, shy away from the fact that, like, other teams have injuries as well. The injuries that we have had, I think you could look, and I'm going to translate for you. Hey, like Anthony, I'm gonna translate for you. You're pretty much saying if Trey Waynes were to play that game, that we wouldn't have lost.
Hey guy, how you doing?
During the quarantine, it's all good. Hey, look.
Yeah, Zoom era, right?
Man, listen, I do that all day with my son, so that's
same,
all
I'm saying.
But what I was gonna say, you know, like for the most part, like everybody has injuries, and Trey Waynes is a big one. I think you could single-handedly look at, you know, like the Browns game and say, yeah, that's a loss. I mean, I think you would say you would have won that game. I think there's other different games that I could point to, and I say, hey, maybe if Geno was there like early on in some of the, you know, like even in the Eagles game, like there's so many ones. But I'm gonna just go with everything that you guys said. I mean, Trey Waynes, DJ Reader. Those are the two. Those are the two right there. Geno Atkins not being what he is, what we're accustomed to, is major. There's no
getting around. So Matt, I think we made it pretty easy on you there for you to go last here. But what are your thoughts on like the biggest impact injury? We kind of have all talked about defense. Not to throw you an alley-oop, is there anything on offense that you may see, or maybe something that we didn't mention on defense in terms of injury that had a big impact on the season?
I mean, you know, honestly, Xavier Seulofuolo is the only one really on offense, but he was a guy that was a middle of the road free agent. I thought he was a good scheme fit. So, you know, I am excited to see what he can do in this offense, because I think he could be a good fit. And I think he's a better fit than John Miller for them. But I don't know. Some people thought he did well in that first game. I didn't think he looked very good in that first game. So, you know, who knows? But I mean,
did he grade well in that game, though?
I've heard people say he does. I think he had a decent PFF grade in that game. I didn't think he looked very good personally. But, you know, I think you all hit the nail on the head. I think this defense, schematically, we saw a big jump forward from what we saw last year. And I think that's having some change in the coaching staff and some guys that are a little bit more on page with Anarumo. I think that's why they went out and got a Trey Waynes, because I think, you know, maybe I like Dre, but maybe Dre was an old dog he couldn't teach new tricks to or something, and they wanted to go out and get somebody else, you know, it was just going to be a better fit for them. And really, you know, I believe it was the Colts game. You know, in the Colts game, people were complaining that they were playing zone and they weren't blitzing to rush the passer. And in the Browns game, they blitzed and they got burned, you know, and that's the thing. Like, you got to get a pass rush, or you have to cover very well. It's great if you can have both, but you got to have one of them. You know, so yeah. I mean, all those D line injuries, like, it killed him. All those D line injuries did it. And somebody said here in the chat, and we haven't mentioned this because it's been a short term injury, but Sam Hubbard's another one. You know, Sam Hubbard was the other guy that can do something for you inside, at least. And without him or Geno inside, literally nothing. Carl Lawson's pass rush win percentage is pretty average right now, but when you're the only dude, you know, right. put TJ Watt across from him, and he's going to be winning at a higher rate. I guarantee that. You know, like, it put Geno in there at full Geno mode. He'll be getting more wins in the edge. So I mean, that really gets you right there. And then, like, Darius Phillips, he's just not good enough. And neither is LeSean Sims. I was wrong. And I'll throw this out as something I was wrong about early in the year when we were seeing just a little bit of LeSean Sims. I was like, man, we need to see more of this guy. Like, I thought he looked pretty good in the reserve role. Nope. You know, we were seeing just the right amount. And you know, Phillips, you know, the don't waste my talent tweet, or you know, I'm paraphrasing that. But
right.
I think what's going on there is Anarumo knows that he's got two guys that shouldn't be playing. And he's like, man, I can't get 50 good reps. I can't get 60 good reps out of either one of these guys. Maybe I can get 25, 30 out of each of them. You know, right. And they're trying to create a Franken corner there because, man, they just don't have anything on that other side.
No, I have to agree with you for sure. And thanks for everyone that's tuning in right now through all of the different pages. We have the Cincy Jungle Facebook page going live right now. We have Zim Hude's YouTube. We also have the OBI YouTube. So please be sure to like, comment, and subscribe to all of those for sure. But one thing that I saw in the chat that we did not mention, CJ Uzomah. Like, for me, like, the tight end position honestly has kind of died ever since he kind of went out there. We've had some good games here and there from Drew Sample. But really, when you're trying to squeeze plays out of Seathan Carter on fourth down, that's when you know that it's pretty bad there. I think definitely the tight end position. As you guys said, obviously the corner position. I think the reason that me and Zim kind of smiled when you talked about Sims is Zim actually has a contact that he's cool with the Titans. I think he's the strength and conditioning coach there. One of my guys, he works in IT and he's like an assistant coach. And as soon as I text him about LeSean Sims on my side, he sent me back a LOL. He's trash. So that one did not inspire much confidence for me. And I mean, I'm not going to say that that's my opinion of him, but it did not give me high expectations for Sims coming in. So the next one we have here is, what was the biggest play of the year? Zim, let's start with you. What was the biggest play of the year this season for you so far?
The biggest play of the year to me is easily the AJ Green touchdown at the end of the Chargers game one. I think that game right there, it changes the narrative on AJ Green. It changes the narrative on the whole entire wide receiver core. It changes the record. It changes, I believe, like how you power rank us. Currently right now, Bleacher Report has us power ranked at 20th after we just knocked the Titans off. You win that Chargers game, you win. I think you probably find a way to win the Eagles game. Like, that game has so much. It started up this thing that we can't describe, where at the end of games, it's like, oh no, here we go. I think if the Bengals would have won that game, I think it would have just set the tone for so much, and especially the AJ Green narrative, because I point to that game and I point to two passes in that Denzel Ward broke up in the second game, and then it was another pass in the Eagles game. Those three plays from AJ Green right there drastically take him from probably the 30-something ranked fantasy football player to like the 18th. Like, those three plays were so big, like, they would have given him touchdowns, they would have given him yards. That one big play changed so much moving forward, and I think it set the tone for the season, and they finally kind of broke out of it this past week.
No, I have to agree with that one. Matt, what are your thoughts on the biggest play of the year so far?
You know, it seems like a bit of recency bias, but I think there were a lot of really big plays that led to this win this weekend. And obviously there's a couple of big catches, some ridiculous catches in the fourth quarter from Tyler Boyd with the one that looked like it was a glitch on Super Nintendo or something. and obviously Auden Tate, you know, getting air up there and keeping that drive alive to you know, waste the clock there. But to me, the big one in that game was in the second quarter, and it was the fourth and five throw. That was you know, we saw the vintage Burrow on the rollout in the first drive where he threw it to the sideline pass to Higgins. But this was another kind of vintage Burrow where they were only sending three, and there was good protection, and he moved around the pocket a little bit, and it seemed like he was waiting there forever. And then he threw a dime down the field to Higgins. I mean, Higgins, there were three guys around him. Two guys were really close, but Higgins took a hit there. I think it was a 22-yard gain, I believe, and converting the fourth down. And really, I mean, that led to them scoring on that drive and going up two scores. And one of the big things that I always talk about, and, you know, humble plug here, but when I do the five keys to the game on Cincy Jungle, one of the things I talk about a lot is winning the middle third. And the Bengals aren't the middle eight. And when the Bengals aren't very good at winning the middle eight in general, all right, because they give up points. It's the last 4 minutes of the first half, they give up points. The first 4 minutes of the second half, they've been giving up points a little bit, but, you know, and they've often been kicking off in the second half, which doesn't help them there. But they won it in this game because they scored at the end of the half. They scored that touchdown, and then the defense got a stop on the first drive. So they went up by two scores, and they got that stop on the first drive of the second quarter, the second half. So that was huge for them. And I really think – and also the aggressiveness too, because I think that's something that a lot of the complaints about Zach Taylor – have been him not being aggressive. So the fact that he understood that situation, he saw it and he's like, we got to go up. You know, he didn't say, oh, we're going to pin him deep and then they won't be able to score before the half. No, he's like, nope, we're taking a two score lead right here. That, you know, that to me, all of that kind of combined makes that the play of the year right now.
Oh yeah. These are some great examples that you guys are giving. Let's go to John for his play of the season so far.
I just want to say for that play that Matt talked about, that was actually Burrow's first 20-yard completion between the numbers of the season.
Oh,
and cool. Like when I charted him like last year against Florida, Auburn, Alabama, Georgia, and Clemson, he didn't complete a single pass like 20 yards down the field, like over the middle. So that was a big step for him and for that situation. Was I look at like these past 3 weeks, Burrow is like fourth in the composite score of expected points added per play and completion percentage over expectation. He's up there with Tom Brady and Pat Mahomes and Drew Brees and the elites right now. He's playing elite ball, and the Bengals offense is clicking on all cylinders. And I feel like it all started, it was like the third drive of the Colts game. The Bengals had like a drop from Mike Thomas, had a false start. It was 3rd and 9. They were already up 2 touchdowns, but it was like the first like just glimpse of adversity in that game. And then Burrow found T. Higgins for 67 yards down the right side. It was the first actual deep completion of the season, and we talked about like early in the season, like this offense has the potential to be so much more if they can connect on some explosive plays, because that was the one thing that was handicapping them. Obviously the pass protection issues were extremely prevalent, and they still are to this day, but like that offense, it really that first deep ball opened up so many things for this offense. And ever since then, Burrow has like been, I think, PFF's top deep passer from week 7 to 8. So we've seen the difference that makes, but that was the first time that it happened. It was like, if they won that game, I feel like that would have been the play that was like the turning point. Like the Bengals could have turned it, or like they could have failed on a third down conversion there, had another deep incompletion. Like that narrative continued to sting, and maybe the Colts come back a little bit earlier, make that game more of a blowout than just a comeback, come from behind win for them. But I think if they win that game, that would have been the turning point. And I think it has been the turning point for this offense as a whole and how much more efficient the offense in Burrow has been.
Definitely, definitely. AC, what are your thoughts on the biggest play so far this season?
So I've got two, and I'm gonna make them positive. I'm not going to go the what-if route, but I'm going to go back to the Jacksonville game, their first win. They went into the half infamously giving up points right before the half to the Jacksonville Jaguars, down 13-10. And you kind of felt like, here we go again, based on what happened the first 3 weeks. You know, the points right before the half, they're down, they're not scoring many points, and you just kind of felt down and out about it. Well, the ensuing drive, they go 5 plays, 75 yards, and one of them is on Joe Mixon going 34 yards down up the right sideline for a big touchdown. The Bengals had not been running the ball well. Their offensive line had been a mess up to that point. Still is kind of a work in progress right now. But, you know, they just hadn't been running the ball. And that was a game that, you know, if they were going to try and feel good about where they were going with things, if they were going to try and get back on track offensively, that was kind of a moment where you go, okay, there it is. Then they got the lead and never really looked back, right? So that was one play that I felt was a big one. And then you can go to this week. There was a moment in the Tennessee game very late in the game, 3 minutes left. The Bengals have a lead, and they are actually up 31-20. And all of a sudden, Joe Burrow throws an inexplicable pass that gets intercepted and taken to the Bengals' 26-yard line. You go, oh, my gosh, are they going to let this thing slip away again? Right. And the call got turned back, and it was kind of a I don't know. And it was just kind of a moment where you go, all right, you know what? This game's going to be put on ice for the Bengals now. They get a quality win, and they actually get a call their way, which seems to never happen, right?
Right.
So those two plays for me, one is kind of an obvious one and a touchdown, but one is actually a penalty going their way, both really led to them getting their wins this year.
Right. Yeah. Now you, I definitely thought the same way, Anthony. I was like, oh, they just let us kind of get away with one there. And I was, yeah. I definitely was worried for sure, especially with that being in our own territory for sure.
Let me ask you this though. Say that they throw that pick. That this is the one thing that I preach to everybody. Say that they throw that pick in years past or whatever. Maybe we figure out a way to lose that game. Say they throw it back. And then this is when my Titans friends, they do that. They tie the game up. You think Joey B not going to go down the field and go win the game?
Well, I think he's going to go down the field and get you what should be the game-winning points, right? But then, you know, if they leave any kind of time on the clock, we've seen what the defense does at the end of halves and at the end of fourth quarters. Joe Burrow, to me, I have all the faith in the world that he would rebound and get them points to go ahead. It's can you hang on to that lead? And that's why this week was pretty important, and getting that call was pretty important. But, I mean, I know what you're saying, Zim. I just, you know, I've seen too many slip away that should have been wins this year.
Yeah, this year alone, like Joe Burrow doesn't have a come from behind victory yet. Like, come on.
I think they learned from their mistakes. Like Matt pointed out earlier, they were in the zone one time, they got crushed. They went in the man, they got crushed. So what did they do? Mix it up, cover three shell, come back with a little bit of man, mix it up or whatever. They learned from their mistakes, and that was part of the reason why they beat the Titans. I think if they get into that same situation again, Joe Burrow would tell coach, "Hey, look. It's a minute on the clock, but we're going to run this thing down, and we're going to be the last people to take that shot." I don't think that'll ever happen again, not this season, in my opinion.
I think
that could be a great what-if, too, by the way. I guess the Browns, they were running man at the end, and the first play of the Browns' game-winning drive, Mackenzie Alexander missed the sack.
Right.
Yep.
Like
I talk about that play.
He got there, and he just like that could have been the game.
Every player after the game pointed to that thing, because I don't think fans understand. You make that sack, like you said, the game. I'm not going to say it's over, but you're dealing with like 30 something, 40 something seconds on the clock, and they're at like the 15 yard line, and that game doesn't go like that. I think unless they get beat deep on the man,
and you're in second and forever too.
Right.
You need a miracle just to come back from that, and the clock is ticking.
Right.
Oh, valid points. For me, though, I'm going to go to the Colts game, and I'm going to go with the 67-yard pass to T. Higgins deep down the sideline. And I think that was like his arriving moment for this team, because if you remember back week one, he didn't really get many snaps. He wasn't really coming along. At that point, they still had John Ross kind of as the second receiver. And I think that was the game where he kind of emerged, and they kind of saw like, okay, well, if A.J. Green is kind of struggling right now, let's start to put T on the field more. And I feel like after that play, it was just like, okay, yeah, T. Higgins is legit. He's here for sure. This may be somewhat of a changing of the guard to him, not necessarily replacing A.J. or being A.J., but kind of assuming that role and kind of rising to it. So for me, it was that one for sure. And especially for it to be on a deep bomb where T. Higgins, not really known for his speed, was really criticized a lot in the NFL draft process for that. So for him to kind of have that on that play was just like a culmination of his kind of coming out party, at least for me in that sense. So definitely all great plays. That was probably the funnest set of responses that I got there. It was definitely some good ones. I thought Zim at first killed it, but you guys brought up some very good ones, especially Anthony, the end of the last game one. I definitely thought that as well. So next we have here is the most rewarding personal moment this season. Let's start with Matt. What has been the most personal rewarding season or moment of the season for you?
Yeah, I didn't get this one. So for me personally, what was most rewarding to me?
Yeah, like in the sense of You know, like, what is the most satisfactory moment that you've had? Maybe, like, it could have been, you know, through your pod, through, you know, watching film, or, like, just being a Bengals fan.
Well, I mean, this week on the pregame show at the end, I said, F it, I'm calling a win. And so that felt pretty good, getting that one right. Because I was sure people were going to remember if I got it wrong. So, I will say, like that was a great moment, though. And honestly, like, I was thinking all week that the Bengals had a chance to win that game. And it was like, man, it'd be great if they could at least get one of those guys back. They didn't get anybody back. And, like, my confidence was waning. And like, seriously, I woke up and I saw Michael Jordan wasn't playing. And this is not at all a negative about Michael Jordan. But I saw that and I'm like, they're going to win. Like, because sometimes there's just
thank
so
you, Matt. Thank you. Because I don't have the highest opinion of Michael Jordan either. And sometimes
I think it was so strange. Like, yeah, it was strange.
Like, sometimes it's like your back is so far up against the wall, and like the odds are so much against you that it's there was just too many bad things that it becomes a negative, or that becomes a positive. Excuse me. Like, sometimes there's just so many bad things that it becomes a positive. And like, the way I see this, and I mean, I don't want to be a dick, but I'm going to throw in like the Dunlap thing too, because that was some negative stuff that was going on during the week too.
Right.
Man, I love Dunlap, and they said that wasn't affecting their locker room, but it had to be eaten in the locker room a little bit. So now he's gone, and now you get all this other shit going on, and what do? You galvanize, you come together, and you scrape out a win with, you know, your day one number 6 through 10 offensive linemen. I mean, like maybe that's what they needed, to just bring them together and be able to fight like that. I mean, I honestly, and like, that the line didn't play very well. You know, we've all seen the PFF grades. The line didn't play that well, but they fought. Like, and the whole unit fought, and they fought together. And like, to me, like, that could be a really big moment for them going forward. Not just getting the win against a quality team, but getting a win against a quality team when nothing was going right for them, you know, in the week leading up to it.
No, I think that you hit on a good area there. I think definitely at first when we were watching the game, I thought initially, like everyone else did, zero sacks, the line played amazing. But when you watch the JT O'Sullivan film breakdown, you see guys just like, especially on the play that we all talked about where Joe Burrow's running and missing all of those guys. Well, that was because the line wasn't really blocking or doing much on that play. But John, what were your thoughts on the most rewarding part of this season so far for you?
Yeah, Matt, that was hysterical. I don't know why that was so funny, but it was. I think for me, it was like week three. I was hyping Carl Lawson a lot in the preseason. It just felt like, you know, he was healthy, wasn't dealing with any nagging injuries, and you know, to start the season, he was a little bit, I guess, on the slow start. Like the first two games, he wasn't really doing much as a pass rusher, and then he kind of came alive against the Eagles in week three. And ever since then, he's been carrying this pass rush. Like Matt has said, like, he hasn't been fantastic by any means, but he is by far the most valuable member of that defensive line right now, because without him, they're not getting any pressure with anything. And right now, he's looking like a guy that the Bengals should be considering, you know, reinvesting in the offseason. And if he doesn't stick around here, he's going to see a sizable contract with another team. Like that game against, you know, Jason Peters, and I think Lane Johnson was back as well, but he was just owning Jason Peters. It looked like Jason Peters should have been retired during that game. And he was pushing back constantly, and he was getting in Carson Wentz's face, and he just had a really good game. And ever since then, he's been pretty solid as a pass rusher. And I just felt a little bit vindicated that, you know, he was a breakout performer that I'm glad he's actually breaking out and helping out this defense any way he can.
Yeah, definitely. I have to agree there. AC, most rewarding part of the season so far for you?
I'm going to go with what Matt said just about this week in general. You know, just the fact that the Bengals were able to get such a good win against what seems like a quality team during a week where their reputation was dragged through the mud, man. I mean, it was like John Ross, Carlos Dunlap. I mean, and they came out and they played well in every phase. So that's one of them. And I guess I'll get a little sappy and I'll cheat a little bit here because this is technically a calendar year that I'm referencing. But getting this crew together for Cincy Jungle has been really rewarding for me because John and I, you know, John and I built a decent little show. You know, we did our thing and we were looking to grow the channel and we identified a couple of really talented people. You know, I'm definitely the dummy of the group. You guys are the brains and the talent, and you know, what we've been able to achieve, who we've been able to interview, the different things we're doing. I feel like we've built a really good team and a good groove going forward. So, you know, I'm pretty proud of what the five of us have been able to do over the past year, especially in 2020, dealing with, you know, with the Corona stuff and being, you know, talking to all these different people on our shows. It's been pretty cool. So I guess that's just shameless self-promotion on my part, but you know, I'm pretty stoked on what's been happening with the Cincy Jungle channel based on the team here.
Yeah, definitely. So if you are watching this, if you are following this, please be sure to subscribe to all of the channels, like and comment and give us your feedback, and definitely check out the podcast for sure. The Cincy Jungle podcast, wherever you get your podcast from, please be sure to check that out. Also, leave us a review. You guys obviously in the comments seem to like this, but we need some of those reviews. So help us out in that area. Zim, what was your most rewarding part of this season?
I'm going to piggyback off of AC Slater a little bit. Like, I am very, like, to understand, I know we all have our own takes and we all have our own content. And I think that's so awesome. Like, it's like, you don't just get one. Like, if you are listening to this and you've seen some of us for the first time or whatever, like, people from my channel, whatever, like, please follow this whole entire team because there's so many people that probably disagree with me that just can't stay away from my page or something, but I think they probably might agree with Matt or they might agree with John, or, you know, like, there's so many different views on this stuff. But I will say, like, throughout this this whole process, it's really good to know, like, you got a bunch of people that care about, like, the Bengals as much as you do, because where I live at, there ain't too many of us. You can go anywhere in the world. You can go get you some Steelers gear. You can go get you some Cowboys gear. You can go get all that stuff. But ain't no stores around here. You can get no black and orange. So when I went through this process, like, going through, like, Instagram is how I kind of came up a little bit or whatever. But do you realize 5 years probably ago, I counted, and I'm a weird guy, I screenshotted a lot of people that didn't believe what we were saying about, like, getting a quarterback and different things like that. And me and my partner Ace here on Orange is the New Black, I tell you, last October, when we were pretty much done with, like, that team, and we started telling people, like, hey, it's this guy. We first started off with Tua for a second, right? And then we hopped right on the Burrow, like, early. This is, like, October. Like, we were full on. This is what it is. And when
you even bought a jersey.
I bought a Joe Burrow jersey. I bought a Joe Burrow jersey. I went and got a custom Joe Burrow jersey made. I went and created Burrow Babies. If you guys don't know, I make a clothing line called Burrow Babies. I went and trademarked Burrow Babies. I saw the vision. I saw everything that was happening. And do you know that people wanted to kill me? Did you know that we would come on there and be talking about tank mode and people just was like, how could you talk about us like that? We need to win. And I'm like, you're not seeing the bigger picture. Like, there's something else out there that I'm telling you, you just can't see it yet. But we had to go through, like, a whole year. And then fast forward to just now, some of those same people that I remember, because I always had this thing where I say, I'm not going to block anybody just because y'all saying bad stuff or whatever. Like, I don't care. I love that. Bring that shit on. But we went through that, and some of those people hit me, like, when we won the game this past week. Some of those same people was like, all right, I'm on board. Yeah. And I'm like, you just now got on the Joe Burrow train? Or, like, so, like, to see, like, people, like, collectively, because I think it made our fan base, I tell people about this, it divided our fan base. So people would go on Twitter and just argue about Chase Young or argue about – should we keep Dalton or the ways to structure a team? And I think for the first time after that win, regardless how you feel about the pieces that are missing, I think for the first time collectively, everybody was all on one accord. Like, and like I told you, Ace, winning cures all, but winning a game and then collectively everybody saying, we got our guy, now let's go figure out the rest or whatever. I felt really good about that.
Yeah, I have to give you that one, Zim, because when that happened, Anthony had just brought us on to Cincy Jungle. So when people started listening to us, and I think it was the episode, it was like time to tank. It was like a play on words, like it's time to tank, because we just didn't feel like Andy Dalton, and it was nothing against him. I think people always took it as you guys hate Andy Dalton or anything. It was never that. It was just that we felt that when everything is folding or not working around him, he can't raise the level of this team. And we saw it when we lost to Josh Allen. We saw it when Kyler Murray came in. And we kind of started to get away from, like, even wanting to really break down the games like that, because it was like, this is obvious that we need a quarterback. And like Zim said, it started with Tua. But I have to give you the credit for Burrow, because once Burrow was starting to ascend, you were all in on the Burrow. I was trying to manifest the whole Tua thing, and you were like, nah, I'm going to take this a step further, and I'm going to manifest the Burrow thing. And I think all of those battles that we fought to have what has happened this season and to see the whole, like, narrative kind of change on that, for people to see, like, oh, okay, this does make sense, to go from you guys aren't real fans because you want to lose this just to get this number one pick, or Chase Young is way better than Joe Burrow, for it to play out the way that it did was amazing. But I think for me, I think the most rewarding part this season definitely was AJ Green and the interview that he did with us. Like, to really learn, about AJ Green, the person, and see, like, how humble he was, like, to see the way that he carried himself, like, to be able to just get a response, like you said, from AJ Green is just crazy. Like, to just text AJ Green is insane. But I think to actually the fact that he took it serious with us, he worked with us, and we got to see the actual, like, person that we typically don't see in these interviews when they're completely asking them about football. But to ask him these things and for him to enjoy it, I think was just the most rewarding one for me, because, you know, it's no secret, I think most of our favorite players, I would probably say, just speaking for myself and maybe some of you guys, it's been AJ Green. As soon as we drafted him in 2011, I was just praying that we didn't screw that up to get him there. And, like, literally when we drafted him, I remember jumping off of, like, the couch as soon as we drafted him. So for that to just be leading up to that moment where, like you guys said, going through what we went through in 2020, I never would have thought, like, in 2020, I'd be interviewing AJ Green. Like, that just blew my mind, like, honestly, throughout this whole season. So I think for me, it's just that point of it. It sucks that his season didn't get off to the best start, right? That was just a crazy moment, I think, for myself.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but, like, didn't he kind of get it together right after he came on your show? I'm just saying.
No, he actually – that's when it went downhill. So it was the Browns game. It was the Browns game. And so, like
– they wanted to trade it. They wanted to trade him after our show. Like, the next two games – the next two games, that's when the, like, get AJ out of town. So
it was like, oh, you're just defending this guy because he was just on your show. It was bad.
Oh, they're still there. They still sitting there, like, they messaging me, telling me why we didn't make a move for the trade deadline. They're still there.
Yeah, but to see the type of guy that he is, man, like, he's just a normal guy. It's crazy. You would not think that, but he's honestly just a normal guy. So I guess that segues into the interviews, and we all have had crazy interviews, amazing interviews. I've got to ask each and every one of you, which was your favorite one? So I guess I kind of spoiled it for myself. So we'll start with Anthony on what your favorite interview was this season.
Ooh, there was, I've had him on a couple times. I always fanboy out with Munoz, just because the USC and Bengals thing, you know, and Hall of Fame guy, and I just always fanboy out on that guy. But I think John will agree with me on this one. It's a little bit different from so many. I mean, I know we enjoyed Mike Daniels. We've talked to him a couple of times. He's a really engaging guy. But for me, I really liked talking to Tim McGee, a guy who played for the team in the 1980s, a wide receiver. He's, you know, pretty good player, had a 1,000-yard season with the team. If you go back and listen to that interview, that dude is engaging. That dude is really intelligent, and he just knows his stuff. It was just a really interesting interview. So, I mean, there was a lot of other ones I could point to, but for me, that one just kind of keeps creeping up to the top of mind in terms of top interviews, at least for this year.
Definitely, definitely. Zim, what was your favorite one?
My favorite one, I'm going to tell you, AJ Green, I thought that interview was great, right? And I feel like it's so good because I think moving forward, I think we got to do that AJ Green stuff. I wanted to do more with that. So that's my only thing with that. Like, that's my own personal goal where I'm like, we need to do that more often and develop something with that, right? That's one of my goals. But I'm going to tell y'all this. If y'all never seen me before or y'all never seen our interview, when me and Ace first said we're going to commit to interviewing some people, one of the people and we're going to develop our own style. Khalid Kareem, that interview to me is like how we like to interview, like somebody, like the research that was behind that one, just my own personal favorite, I guess, is that one because, you know, he was so engaging. We were so on point. The questions that we had, like every single thing I think we threw at him, it like blew his mind. And to see his face, it was like awesome. And I'm going to tell you another one too. It's the rawest interview I ever had. Like, no, like off the break, he just set the tone, cursed on the first sentence. Like, he just went in. The TJ Houshmandzadeh is like the rawest, realest interview I've ever done in my life because it's just like people want to see what we talk like when we ain't online or what we whatever. Go watch the TJ Houshmandzadeh interview. Like, that shit is like everything. And he feels the same way about John Ross as I do too. So,
John, what was your favorite interview that you guys had this season?
McGee is definitely up there. And like, after we finished that, like, me and Anthony were just talking afterwards. Like, that was insane. That was crazy. That was great. It was exactly what I wanted, like, an interview with a former player to go with. And we've interviewed a lot of former players, like Dahani Jones comes to mind as another very intrinsic one or very eccentric one. And but like McGee specifically was just like, because I mean, I was born in 96. I'd never watched the team in the 80s. I didn't live very much through the 90s in that time. So like hearing that perspective from former players from those eras and talking about their experiences with like Sam Weish and Paul Brown, even to an extent, it was always refreshing. But I think like the one that it just felt like the best feel for an interview was Mike Daniels. I think the first time he came on, because I mean, we've interviewed a lot of people, especially this year. It's been a great year for interviews, but like that was the first time that we were interviewing like an actual player on the Bengals' current roster, at least this year. And you know, for a guy who had just signed on to the team, to take the time to come talk to us and be very engaging and talk about not only just football stuff but stuff off the field too, how big of a nerd he is in terms of comic books and Dragon Ball Z, and just talking about basically anything. And it was great, and we got some great perspective from him, and he was just so engaging and energetic. And then for him to come back on again and having an even more engaging interview with him, I think that first Mike Daniels interview always comes to mind as something that was crazy for me.
Yeah, that was one that I definitely enjoyed, especially when you guys got into the Dragon Ball stuff. That was cool. Matt, what was your favorite interview so far this season?
You know, from watching you guys' stuff, like I loved AJ and I loved Mike Daniels because those interviews were not like about football. Yeah. Like, you know, like they were just great because it was just like talking to some dude that you just met. You know what I mean? And it was so that was pretty cool. And I don't even like I think I'm just a little too old to be into Dragon Ball Z and stuff like that. So like I have like. Like I would coach guys and they'd be talking about it. I'd be like, what are you guys talking about? So I had no real point of reference for that. And even I really enjoyed that one. You know, personally, you know, from my perspective, I really enjoyed my interview with Greg Cosell coming into the draft. You know, he had some really interesting things to say as we got into that one. We actually talked a little bit about T. We talked a little bit about some of the other receivers and guys to pair Burrow with. Also really enjoyed Bengals assistant offensive line coach Ben Martin. I think that was a good conversation, you know, too, because obviously me coming from a coaching background and, you know, we speak each other's language a little bit. But also just kind of being able to get a little insight into you know, what the thought process is and how they look at things. You know, made me feel a little bit better about things moving forward, because you know, you definitely you know, like what's coming down from those guys. And I think a guy like that too, because you know, he's not the guy that gets interviewed all the time. I think it was a little bit more open than you sometimes get out of those guys.
Yeah, definitely, definitely, for sure. I definitely took a listen to that Greg Cosell one, because man, he is a notable guy to have on there, especially when you're talking about the draft and stuff like that. So yeah, I liked what he had to say there, especially I think he talked about Denzel Mims on that one and T. Higgins and stuff like that. And he did a great breakdown and run through. I think for me, it's tough because Zim definitely hit on some good ones with Khalil Kareem. I definitely enjoyed his reactions. TJ was crazy. That was the one that I first got like nervous on, because like as soon as TJ like popped into it, I was just like, holy shit, this is TJ Husmanzada. Like I kind of definitely had a moment there. But I would probably say Hugh Jackson. The Hugh Jackson interview was so crazy because like, it wasn't one where we really got that much time to prepare, right? Because he was just like, yeah, let's do it now. And it was just like, whoa, right. All right, spur of the moment kind of thing. But he also was a guy that was just like super down to earth, very open and everything. And to kind of get some of those questions that we've always had, like what's going on with the AJ McCarron trade? Like how did that go down? The Carson Palmer thing, how did that go down? To finally get him on record of actually saying things and kind of talking about like the situation with Marvin and ownership and stuff like that. That was a very dope moment. I also will say Willie Anderson. I mean, I think Willie Anderson deserves his own podcast, because like Willie could essentially, as you guys all know, because we've all had him on before, he could go for hours. He can talk about everything. He'll tell you about all of these cool stories and adventures and stuff like that. So Willie was definitely one that I enjoyed. And then also Jeff Blake. I mean, to bring Jeff Blake back into Bengalsdom and try to give him some of the flowers that he deserved was pretty cool, especially like to have that shaking Blake stuff and everything of that nature. But moving on, we've got to talk about the midseason awards. So we've got offensive MVP, we've got defensive MVP, rookie. So I'm going to go through – I guess I'm going to ask you guys each individually, and you can give me your three. So you can give me your offensive MVP, your defensive MVP, and I guess who you think is the rookie of the year. So for me, I'm going to say it's hard here because I feel like offensive MVP and rookie could be the same person. I'm going to say offensive MVP has to be Joe Burrow. Defensive MVP for me, Jesse Bates. Rookie, I'll just go with T. Higgins since I don't want to give Joe two awards. So, Anthony, what would be your midseason awards so far this season?
Of those three, it's hard to disagree with you, man. Hard to go different directions. I will say this. I want to give a little nod to Logan Wilson. He's in spot snaps and whatnot. He's made a couple of plays that have really popped out. You know, he had the little injury, the concussion there in the middle of the first stretch of the games there. But you know, for the team just failing time after time and drafting these linebackers in the third round, it looks like they finally got a guy, even if he's a little bit limited. Maybe he's not a three down guy, especially not right away. He's a guy that I've been pretty pleased with in terms of what I've seen production per snap. So I think you hit the nail on the head, Ace, in terms of who you're giving those awards to. But I do want to give a little tip of the cap to Logan
Definitely.
Wilson.
John,
I like what I've seen from him so far.
What are your midseason awards so far?
I think it has to be Burrow for offensive and rookie, and then Bates for defensive. I think if there was someone different for offensive, it's probably Tyler Boyd. I just think that when AJ is struggling, John Ross is just being phased out of the offense, and T. Higgins is finding his way. Tyler Boyd had like PFF's second highest receiving grade from weeks 2 to 4. He was carrying a passing offense and was helping, you know, Burrow's the quick ascendance and development early on in the season. So I think he deserves credit for offensive MVP. Obviously T. Higgins deserves recognition in the rookie chase, but I mean, Burrow is, he's the bona fide MVP. He's what an MVP looks like for a team that needs everything that a quarterback has. And Jesse Bates is the exact same thing on the defense side of the ball. I look at that Colts game, like the defense was reeling throughout, you know, ever since the end of the first quarter. They were giving up long drives with big plays by Phillip Rivers, and Bates was largely invisible for that game. But when they needed a play, they needed some form of life to spark them winning that game or giving them a chance to win. You know, you had Jesse Bates' first interception of the year on that, you know, that deep ball down the left side of the field. You know, it was crazy because like 6 weeks into the season, you know, how is Bates not at an interception? He's done basically everything else, and it's for what makes an elite center field safety, an elite center field safety. But that was his first pick, and it felt like it should have come a lot sooner in the season. But it was the play that needed to be made, and he made it. And that is just it's what an MVP does. It's what a defensive player of the year candidate does. And he may not win that award, but he definitely deserves recognition for it.
Yeah, definitely. Matt, what about you?
I mean, I agree with everything you guys have said, and I'll add on to what John was saying about Bates. You know, like there's the Colts interception, and then there's this week. The Titans were driving the field, and he came and they converted. Like the Bengals had some chances to get out the field, and I mean, honestly, Tannehill hit some really good passes on that drive. I mean, having a better pass rush would have helped, but the coverage wasn't terrible. But they were converting some balls where Tannehill was just throwing dimes. But then Bates comes up with the pick. You know, they actually did get after Tannehill there. They made him roll out. Bates sat there. He baited it. He jumped it. And you know, it took them a while to get on the board. So that's really what helped the Bengals build that lead. But yeah, absolutely. It's crazy when you were talking about alternatives to Joe Burrow. I mean, Boyd is awesome, and I think we all expected him to be even better with Burrow. But over the last couple of weeks, Higgins is just doing some crazy stuff, man. Like he's making some stupid, insane catches. I mean, he might be the number one guy pretty soon. Like he might be the guy. I thought it was going to be Boyd, and I thought Higgins would be good, but I thought it was going to be Boyd. But man, Higgins is really good. And just to break the monotony here, I'll throw in another one. My most improved or most surprising player, perhaps, is Bobby Hart. Oh, Bobby Hart is playing really well this year. And look, am I saying don't draft a right tackle? Don't spend a bunch of money on a right tackle this year? Hell no, I'm not saying that. But Bobby Hart he's played two of the best games I've ever seen him play. I watched a bunch of his Giants film when they signed him. And I'm a pretty positive guy, and I'm always trying to see how things can work. But I wrote a film room after that signing. I was like, hey, I heard he was good a year ago. Nope, that's wrong. He was never good with the Giants, but like he has played some pretty good games this year, and he's not the problem on that offensive line right now, and he's not when they weren't winning games, he wasn't the reason they weren't winning games. So Bobby Hart has really stepped up this year, but let's still replace him.
What about you, Zim?
I'm so glad that Matt is here to say something like that because
I'm about to get murdered in the comments here.
You're going to get murdered, and you're going to take the bullet for all of us because I'm not going to say Bobby Hart. But I will say this. The fan base, I feel like they'll like cling on to a person, and if that person makes one mistake, kind of like you were talking about, hey, I thought Dre was pretty decent. People remember big mistakes, and from the cornerback position, you make a mistake, that's a touchdown. Bobby Hart, you make a mistake, that's a sack. And our fan base has gravitated. Like, if Bobby Hart gets called for holding, if we lost that game, get rid of Bobby Hart. Like, not anybody else, Bobby Hart. So I thought it was great that you said that. If you guys don't know, like, you got to follow everybody that's on this panel because you're going to get, like, some true stuff. And nobody's sugarcoating anything. And they're looking at real information and real film. But for me, I would just follow up with everything that Ace said. I think it's really important. I mean, you know, with the Burrow, Bates, I want to say Burrow again for rookie. I mean, it could go Higgins. I absolutely agree with you too, Matt, that Higgins, I mean, in my mind, he is number one. And that's not a bad thing. That's not a bad thing. A lot of people are like, well, I mean, what are you going to do with AJ? I mean, AJ could still be AJ in his second, you know, what I call his second life, or, you know, like whatever, you know, the Larry Fitzgerald world or whatever. Like, that's not a bad thing that Higgins is the guy. It wouldn't be a bad thing that Boyd is the guy. And John, I think you pointed out Boyd too. A guy came in, me and Ace were doing a live one week, and the guy came in there and said, you know what, I'm so tired of coming in here and y'all not mentioning Tyler Boyd. Y'all talk about all this, you know, because I'm like telling them John Ross and it. Why don't y'all talk about Boyd? I honestly feel like Tyler Boyd is the most underrated wide receiver in the National Football League, and it carries over to our fan base where I think people just, maybe because he's a possession slot receiver first, I guess, but he has the ability to go outside, that maybe it gets lost in the sauce or something like that. But Tyler Boyd is a phenomenal player, and it's one of those guys that, unless we're talking like fantasy football or something like that, I just don't hear his name at all. And he's probably leading the league in slot yards. Like, that's crazy. So,
but I'm also gonna take another bullet here, since Matt won't be the only one. And I've talked bad about this guy, but you guys know, like, if I'm wrong on something, I will come clean and say that I was wrong. Alex Redmond, to me, might be the most improved player. To go from a guy that was cut, and I was like, at the time, was happy that he was cut. When he was coming back from the practice squad, I said it was going to be a doomsday thing. For him to play like how he's playing, especially with the Bengals, to have that hole at right guard that they've had ever since Suofilo went down, I think was just amazing. So not saying that he's going to be, like Matt said, not saying so that we shouldn't draft the – shouldn't draft the right guard or anything next season.
But not even doing that. Xavier Suofilo comes back off the bye. Spain comes back healthy, you know, nothing, whatever. You still want Redmond at right guard?
I take Redmond at right guard before I take Michael Jordan at left guard. If Spain's got to take Michael Jordan's position, based off of what we've seen, I'd rather do it that way. Just me personally. But, I mean, Alex Redmond, with my luck, you know, could get destroyed against the Steelers, and then, you know, that would be a bad take. But speaking of the Steelers, we got to talk about the Squealers and the expectations coming out of the bye going forward. So let's start with Matt on this one. What are your thoughts about the Steelers game, and what do you think about, like, after coming out of the bye, what your expectations are?
I'm just going to add real quick to what Zim said. I think Boyd is one of the best leaders in the team too, just from everything he says in interviews and the way he fought through that cramp to get up in that Miami game last year. I mean, I think he's the man, and my gut tells me that he's, you know, one of the top vocal guys in that locker room. But yeah, looking forward to the Steelers. Look, I think you're going to see a huge challenge. And what was the one time this offense really struggled? It was against the Ravens. The Steelers are going to send some crazy blitzes at you. I think the Steelers are a better, more talented defense than the Ravens are. I don't know if they're a better coach defense. And I think Wink makes up for a lot of the shortcomings that they have personnel-wise in that defense in Baltimore. So – But I think they're smart enough that they're going to send some heat. You know that they've got Wyatt. You know they've got Dupree. They've got Fitzpatrick, you know, all over the place in the secondary. So this is going to be a real big test of Burrow, you know, because that was the first thing was all those different looks Baltimore was sending at him. That was the hey rookie moment for him. That he didn't know what was going on all the time, and really honestly. The offensive line, that was a game where the offensive line takes way too much blame because Burrow created a lot of those situations himself because he just didn't know what was going on. But now he's seen it in live action. So this is going to be a test of how can he handle that moving forward. And to make matters worse, we have no idea what the offensive line is going to look like in 2 weeks. So, I mean, we'll have to see what that's going to be. You know, it sounds like Hart might not be around. Could be a good thing. I think Fred played pretty well. I think Fred played well enough to deserve to push for that spot. You know, so we'll see. And that's where they're going to have Watt over there. That's going to be the big time matchup for them. You know, where are we at with the interior with all these new guys that they brought in, with the possibility of Xavier Suofilo being back? sometime soon. So we'll see how that O-line cracks down and how Burrow can take on that pressure. I think that's the big time storyline of this game, because we know that if the defense is going to let Burrow do his thing, that he can keep this team in games. So like that's what it is. They got to score points.
AC, what are your thoughts on the Steelers game, bro?
The one coming up is, I mean, it's a big test. It's a big test. And I think the Bengals will start to get some of these guys back healthy. And that's a big thing. You know, just holistically speaking, in terms of the back half of the schedule here, not only for this game, I always kind of maybe thought that 2020 might have been something similar to the 2003 Bengals, maybe. There's some correlation there, and in that season, Bengals started 1-4, and then they rattled off. They went 7-4 the rest of the way. I don't know that this team will do anything like that necessarily, but with this game, starting with this next game and a couple of others that are back there, I mean, yeah, it's nice to get the win against the Washington team and New York and these other teams that seem to be winnable games. I want to see some quality wins, and they got one last week against the Titans. This one coming up against Pittsburgh, for all the reasons Matt mentioned, you know, the pass rush and maturation of Burrow midseason. I mean, all those things are good barometers to see where this team's at, but you know, I don't want to overlook this one, but I do look at the Monday night one against Pittsburgh coming down the road, because, again, I'm 99% sure I'm the oldest guy on this show right now. So with the age comes cynicism, my friends, and I've seen a lot of primetime collapses. I've seen a lot of losses against the Pittsburgh Steelers. So those two games are really coming into focus for me, particularly the Monday night football one. Can you bring the Steelers into your stadium and get a win on Monday Night Football? I know that's not the one we're specifically talking about, but it is one on the back half of the schedule I'm looking at for this week, the coming week, rather, protect Burrow. And I really want to see the turnovers minimalized and maybe get some semblance of a running game, get some semblance of a balanced attack against Pittsburgh. And if they're able to do that, I think it'll be a very competitive game. Maybe the Bengals can squeak out a win. I don't know. Pretty daunting task there, but that's something for this game against the Steelers in particular. But going forward, the last half of the season, yeah, Burrow's great. The other offensive players we're talking about are great, but if they can maybe get a little bit of a semblance of a running game and a little bit of balance, that would be nice for me.
Mr. But Sharon, they can't win on Monday night. You can't blame Marv and you can't blame Andy.
That's right.
Very true.
Mr. Sharon, what are your thoughts on the Pittsburgh game and just the schedule after?
If anyone out there has a PFF like subscription, there's actually a good article on there that's blocked by the paywall. It's titled "Why the Pittsburgh Steelers Aren't the Best Team in the NFL." They're 7-0. They're the only undefeated team, but there is some empirical evidence as to why they may not be as good as the record states. With that said, I don't see the Bengals winning this one. It's the same thing going into the Ravens game. Like they just don't have the personnel to match up. Like that defense, as dominant as it is entirely carried by their front four. There's just their defensive front. They don't really have any impressive bodies at cornerback or at safety. Like Devin Bush is athletic and he's young, but he's not exactly playing tremendous either. Like TJ Watt,
he's out for the year.
Yeah. Cameron Haywood, Stephon Tuitt, Tyson Alu. Like these guys are going to destroy this offensive line, regardless of how promising that they were, you know, leading up to this bye week. Like it's probably not going to be pretty. There's still going to be things that Burrow can do well, and I think the offense can score a little bit of points. But I just don't have any confidence in this game. Like with the Titans, at least the Titans didn't really have a defense that gave the Bengals a lot of problems. It was just the offensive and how the Bengals defense can counter that. But this one, it would just take a monumental effort by that offensive line and by Burrow as well, to show growth coming off of that Baltimore game from a couple weeks ago, how much development the D does in recognizing these blitzes pre-snap. Going forward beyond that, like obviously, you know, this game doesn't have a lot of confidence, but they can definitely beat the Giants. They can definitely beat Washington. They can definitely beat the Texans. They can definitely beat the Cowboys. The most intriguing game for me is the Dolphins. Right now, they probably have the best defense in the entire league. And when they have both Byron Jones and Xavier Howard healthy at quarterback, they have a smothering defense. And now you have Tua, you know, starting for them, and maybe he can get something going, but they're going to go back into Miami where they were last year with that insane game. And now they have both, you know, the rookie quarterbacks facing each other, and you have a high-powered Bengals offense going up against a stingy Dolphins defense. That's the one that's most interesting to me, because I think a lot of people assume that that was going to be a win going into the season, but the Dolphins are a lot better than what we thought they were, and they're going to be competing for an AFC East title that game. So that's the most interesting game to me. It's going to be a good barometer to see where they actually are, because I don't have confidence with them in these three remaining AFC North games, but that is going to be an interesting chance for them to get another quality win.
Zimothy, what do you have for the Steelers game and the rest of the season?
I'm going to focus on one team, and that's the Pittsburgh Steelers coming up. I don't even all that other stuff up later on. I can't even do that right now. If you're a Bengals fan and you're listening to this right now, I think it's so important that Anthony said that, because that's my message to everyone. Is he said he was older. He said he's older than everybody in the room, and there's so many pessimistic fans and everything out there, right? I can't guarantee when the Super Bowl will happen, but you're going to get a Super Bowl from Joe Burrow, right? That's my first guarantee. In the next 10 years, what you're going to get accustomed to is, like, watch a Russell. If you're listening to this and you don't watch other games, go watch a Russell Wilson game. Go watch a Aaron Rodgers game or a Pat Mahomes game or something like that, right? But especially Russell Wilson. He never had the best pieces around him. He's always in these positions where if you just get him close enough, if you just get him within reach, he always makes the play when it matters the most. We saw that last year when we thought – remember we started out the season, we played them and whatever, and then he just makes enough if you can just get him close enough. Now, I'm not saying that they won't blow the doors off of us, you know, coming up, right? But if you get them just close enough, the confidence in, like, some of the videos that I've been showing people are still, like, the Steelers, like, players dancing and all these different things like that, it's an energy that says that if you could get them in a situation that they're unfamiliar with, like how we've been jumping out on teams, like a 21 or nothing or something like that, they're going to panic. I can promise you that. Like, Ben is going to try to be a hero. Like, there's so many different things that are going to happen. And, yes, they have a better team. But if you could get Joe Burrow close enough, y'all all have to fall accustomed to this. If you can get him close enough for the next 10 years of your life, he's going to win so many more games than what we ever seen with not even half of the roster that some of these teams have. And the one thing about him, too, is when he was at LSU, the biggest games – the biggest moments are the games that he played his absolute best. That was one of the things that drew me to him. Is like, I mean, we get into the player, like before when the Tua thing was a real thing, you know, like he had to come back swinging in that game. And I said, and I watched some of his stuff like after that or whatever. And some of the energy that he's cultivating in the locker room right now, they don't know about, like, a lot of writers, a lot of guys on the beat and stuff, they write that story every year. It's like, these players are so young, they don't know about that. No, they know about it. The difference is the players that we have right now, like the Tyler Boys and the Joe Mixons of the world, they absolutely do not care that they're playing the Steelers. And people say stuff like that, but I can see the fire in their eyes that they don't care. And Joe Burrow surely doesn't care. Now, can he make up for an offensive line that clearly can't handle that front seven? That's to be determined. But they can get them in a position, a turnover or something early on, and get them down or whatever, they're going to panic. And that gives you a shot. It was a story that was written that said that there may be a 16-team playoff, right? Because of COVID, like, hurting so many different teams and stuff. If the Bengals were to get in there as an 8 or 7 seed or whatever, in that format too, I might come on here and tell you we're going to the Super Bowl. Nobody wants to play the Bengals right now. And I'm not saying that as, like, a Bengals – like, yeah, I am a Bengals homer. I am saying that as a Bengals homer. But I will say this. Nobody – like, their offense is humming right now. And I have this saying, I have this mantra, and everybody that follows me, they notice your offense is your defense. If your other team doesn't bring it, the other teams don't bring it, like, this is something that we haven't seen. I mean, what, 81 Bengals or 2005? Like, you could go back and probably find various times in the Bengals history where they've had an offense where you they could hit you from every single angle in a second. It's like we just saw Auden Tate this past week. But the difference is we're able to do that in so many different facets of a football game on offense, right? Other teams have to match that every week. And if their front four doesn't get home, Joe Burrow will eat them alive, and it will be crazy, and it's going to shock the world. But if the front four gets there, yeah, it could be really, really bad. And like you said, Matt, he saw the Ravens, and maybe he was a little confused and a lot of different things that can happen, but I see a confidence that can be knocked back really, really quick if you just get them in a vulnerable position. And I just want to caution everybody, like, to me, that's the key to winning this game and the key to all those Monday night football games and stuff like that. Teams don't want to play the Bengals right now. I promise you, because the offense is really going like at a level that a lot of teams in the NFL are struggling to find that level.
Someone in the comments flame me for not giving Minka Fitzpatrick its credit, and I deserve that. So, yeah, there you go.
Minka ain't better than Jesse Bates.
Yeah, for me, I think at one point in this season, I was worried about this game. I think it was right after the Ravens game, and I've also been on another pod where it's called the AFC North Talk. We meet literally every week, and it's really challenged me and made me step out of my comfort zone with having to watch Squealers games, Ravens games, Browns games. Like, I've had to actually watch them and have an opinion on them. And the one thing that I will say is, obviously, their strength is their pass rush, right? But they have a lot of chinks in the armor. I'm not surprised that John said on PFF.com that the Steelers are not the best team in the NFL because they've just really been super inconsistent. They'll have, you know, great games where the offense is on fire and they have a really talented wide receiver core. I don't think anyone gives them enough credit there. But they'll come out on fire, and then in the next half against, let's say, the Eagles, they just go quiet. And it's like other teams have had chances to beat them. Even you talk about the Ravens game, right? Four turnovers by Lamar Jackson. I think it's actually three. I'm sorry. Three turnovers by Lamar Jackson. They lose by 4 points. They still had a chance to win that game. Lamar just isn't able to hit the guy at the end in the end zone. I think the Eagles game, they got away that game. There's been a routine of the Steelers kind of getting let off the hook by these other teams. Like, teams have been in position, but they just haven't sealed the deal, right? And to me, it makes me think that if Joe Burrow is in that position, if Joe Burrow was in the position of Lamar Jackson last week and he's throwing that pass, I think that Joe Burrow could win that game. But in order for us to win that game, he has to be in the position to do that. And if this pass rush gets to him, I think I told Zim weeks ago before this Titans game, I was like, I'm not going to stream that game. I'm not going to go live and stream that game because I'm going to be pissed off. Joe Burrow's going to get sacked 10 times.
Right.
I'm going to turn it off. Steeler fans are going to jump in the comments. But I think the Titans game.
I felt the same way.
The Titans game definitely brought me back to, okay, maybe this may be a possibility. And I think when you think of everything that's riding on that game coming out, with them winning this game and going into the bye week, right? They get a win. You've got the Steelers, and then you've got a stretch of teams that aren't really strong. And so if they can actually come out and try to win this game, they could easily win three, possibly four games in a row if they do that, right? And that is the mindset that Joe Burrow kind of has, and that's what he said is, we're not a 2-5-1 team, right? We're a team that could easily be, I think he said 6-2 or something like that right now. So they have to come out with that mindset. The other thing is the big secret that I was led into by Tony Serino. He's a great guy. He's okay for a Steelers fan. Like, I would never think that I would be able to agree with the Steelers fan, but he's somewhat okay. They loved Andy Dalton because Andy Dalton wasn't a guy that really challenged their defense at all. And yes, they enjoyed having Andy Dalton there for years. And I think they played the Cowboys. He was like, oh, I can't wait because Andy Dalton's our best friend. So the fact that we've got a guy in Joe Burrow, they're definitely worried about him, but it all comes down to that pass rush and what they can do. Their secondary is not that good. Yes, Minka Fitzpatrick is good. He's not playing on the all-pro level that he was last season. But when you talk about their corners are not playing good. You can get some plays against that secondary, but it all comes down to the pass rush because the pass rush that they have is the best pass rush in the NFL. So that game is definitely going to be one in the trenches. I'm just hoping that we can split with them. If they come out and sack us 10 times, okay, cool, that's fine. I didn't have big expectations going into the game. I think that this is actually going to be a game, though, and I think that the Bengals, because they're already talking about the Steelers going undefeated. If you guys don't know that, their local guys have already started it because the teams that they have left to play aren't really amazing outside of the Ravens. But I think the Bengals can be one of those teams that's going to surprise them and steal a win. I don't know if it's the one coming out of the bye. I don't know if it's the primetime game. But I think that that is going to be the stamp of Joe Burrow. And I can't wait to hear when it happens what the national media is going to say if he's able to pull that off. So those are my thoughts. Sorry we ran over a little bit. But before we get out of here, I just want to give everyone a chance to pretty much say where they can find all of their stuff and let the Houday Nation know where they can find you. We'll start off with John.
Yeah, real quick, like just to reiterate some thoughts from you guys, like there's a reason why you should be following all of us and listening to all of these podcasts, because you get an opportunity to listen to so many different viewpoints and hear so many great interviews. And that's what makes this channel great. You can find me on Twitter at @John_Sheeran. Me and Matt and Anthony and Zim and Ace, we're all on Cincy Jungle. Check us out, cincyjungle.com, every week before games, after games, whatever. So, yeah, eight games down, eight games to go. Let's finish this thing.
Matt, where can I find your stuff at, bro?
Yeah, so all the same places as these guys. You follow me at Coach Minnick, spelled like that. And, you know, all my stuff ends up on there. And then, yeah, over on Cincy Jungle and the Orange and Black Insider.
Zim, where can they find your stuff?
You can find me mostly on Instagram at @Zim_Houday. You can find me on Twitter at @JustZimHouday. Also, Orange is the New Black podcast with my partner here, New Stripe City. Yeah, that's it.
AC, where can they find your stuff, sir?
All the same places at CJ Anthony CUI on Twitter. I gotta say one quick little funny story. I told Zim this a while ago. For a couple of games in a row, I was watching. I watched games with like my brother and my nephew and my son and just other family members. And I kept for two games in a row. My 14-year-old nephew was just zoning out, and he was just watching his phone while we had the game on TV. He had his earbuds in. I'm going, dude, what the hell? Like, are you gonna watch the game? Like, what's going on? And he's like, I am watching the game. I'm like, what? How are you? You don't have the app on your phone. How are you watching? He's like, oh, no, I'm watching Zim's in-game reaction. And so he doesn't listen to the telecast. He doesn't even really watch, like, the game play-by-play. He watches Zim because Zim's in-game reactions is so entertaining on Instagram. So I want to give him a plug. And so he just tunes the rest of his family out. He watches Zim on game day because of how entertaining it is. And I've caught it too. It's a little NSFW, in case you are in the office, but it's very entertaining. So I wanted to give Zim a little
plug. No, appreciate that. And also be sure to subscribe to the Orange and Black Insider YouTube channel as well. We're going live from that right now. So be sure to definitely subscribe to that, and also subscribe to Zim's YouTube channel, the Zim Houday YouTube channel. You can find me at New Stripe City on YouTube, also on Twitter at New Stripe City, and on Instagram at New Stripe City. We're going to try to bring you guys a part two of this coming next week. So definitely be sure to turn your notifications on for all of the channels. Definitely be sure to give us likes and comments and stuff like that. We appreciate that, and we hope that you guys appreciated the Cincy Jungle Super Show. Guys, take it easy. Houday.
Houday.